As we were meditating, I realized that most places where I teach, people kind of know what they're going to get. Is recommended by Philip Moffitt, but no one has actually ever seen me teach unless you've sat retreat with me. I'm not sure if anyone has. And so I hope that these teachings land for you in the way that they are intended. So I'll just start by saying it's been an incredibly tender week. It's been a very, very, very past several months, but especially this week has been incredibly tender. And I had to offer several talks this week, and I wasn't quite sure where to begin. So what I typically do is reach out to a dear elder, a colleague, a friend for some support and advice and guidance. And so I called Sylvia Borstein and just expressed my tenderness. And I think actually when I called her, I was crying, to be honest with you. And I just said, my heart is overflowing, and I don't quite know what to share, what to offer, what's going to be useful for folks right now. And useful for me as well at the same time. And Sylvia reminded me that it's important to always speak from something that happened that day. She said that it's important to speak to something that is fresh and alive in your heart. And she also reminded me that no matter how heartbreaking something is, there is always the opportunity for us to deepen our wisdom, to deepen our compassion, and to continue to cultivate an open heart. And so, what I learned today, the thing that deepened my practice that is allowing the capacity for compassion and open heart is that in the US, we have lost over 100,000 people to COVID-19 virus, 370,000 worldwide. And when I hear these numbers, they feel very just huge and obtuse and not really tangible. I can't quite understand what those numbers mean. And that's another piece of this kind of this disorientation, this dissociating, this confusion that's sort of circling around in our world right now. But those aren't just numbers. These are people. Human beings with bad habits and kind hearts and hobbies. These are folks with children and coworkers and people that rely on them for their daily smiles. These might be the people I know living as a New Yorker, there's always some elder that was wanting to stop and pray with me on my way to the subway in the morning. They are someone's child, someone's parent, someone's great-grandparent, someone's spiritual leader, a family friend, a neighbor, someone's mother, someone's father, an aunt or an uncle. And what I've also learned is that on top of this great loss of life that we're experiencing globally, that there's still greed, hatred, and delusion in this world that we're living in. These three poisons that cloud our judgments and make us forget that we belong to each other. I know this because of the street crimes against the new face of xenophobia. I know this because a Black man was hunted down and shot in the middle of the day while jogging. I know because a Black man was accused of being a sexual predator while bird watching on a weekday morning. And I know this because another Black man couldn't breathe under the knee of a police officer. So what I've learned this week, what is fresh and alive for me, is that there is a deep, deep grief inside of me. And that there might be a deep grief that's living inside of you. My grief has been showing up as restlessness. I can feel the heaviness of my bones and my body. I can feel this connection to this earth. I can feel this stillness, this steadiness. And yet right below or right on top, I'm not quite sure where, there's this buzziness, this unsettledness in my body, this agitation that's living in my body. And for some of you, grief might be showing up, it might be manifesting as aversion. I don't want to see it, I don't want to know it, it's not mine. Or this is too big, this is too much, I don't know how to hold this. It could be showing up as a loss of vitality in the body, as complete and utter mental confusion as to what to do next. We might not be wanting to deal with them or not even wanting to acknowledge them because it just simply is too painful to bear. And for others, there might be a pulling in closer, this over-identifying with the grief, not giving it space to breathe or to be fully seen or known. Roshi Joan Halifax wrote that to deny grief is to rob ourselves of the heavy stones that will eventually be the ballast for the two great accumulations of wisdom and compassion. Grief is often not addressed in contemporary Buddhism, she says, because it's looked on as a weakness of character or as a failure of practice. But from the point of view of this practitioner, it is a vital part of our very human life, an experience that can open compassion and an important phase of maturation, giving our lives and practice depth and humility. And so with this maturation, this depth of humility that is showing up in my life and my practice, I find myself being in deeper relationship and deeper conversation with my body, with my intuition, with my wisdom, with this felt sense knowing of this body. This restlessness in my body has historically been seen as a hindrance, as something that was getting in the way of my real practice, the thing that I needed to overcome, the thing that was in my way. And so each moment we have a choice, and to move towards liberation and freedom, or to move towards deeper suffering, deeper ignorance in our worlds. And somewhere in the middle, there is this stillness, this sacred pause for discernment, for clarity, and for wisdom to arise. And so I'm holding my restlessness. I am holding my grief as an opportunity for this sacred pause, an invitation to stop, to stop waving my hands so much, as Pablo Neruda says. To take a breath and to see it as a portal to a deeper wisdom. To ask myself what's actually true right now. To find equanimity in the stillness, to be guided to do towards what needs to happen next. And sometimes that means to rest. And sometimes what needs to happen next is for me to climb an embankment, climb onto a highway and to stop traffic. And you all don't see this, but just outside of camera are some crutches. I'm actually in an air cast and on crutches right now. So that's what's also what's happening in my life. And sometimes what this discernment, this clarity, this wisdom that's being cultivated in the sacred pause is showing me is that I need to hold space, to listen deeply, to love deeply. I was on a call the other day with over 600 practitioners, all Black, Indigenous, and folks of color. And Ruth King was holding space for us. And she asked us during these times, when all of this hatred and harm and just pain and suffering is happening around us, she asked the question, how do we love? And how do we stay holy? We know now more than ever that we are intrinsically linked together, that we are interconnected, that our lives are intertwined. I know that my personal liberation is tied up in yours, and yours is tied up in mine. And so we protect the quality of our hearts and our minds by not getting caught up in the hatred. It will only colonize our hearts and lead us into deeper grief. And so let's take a breath together. What's happening right now? What's happening right now is that there are fireworks or some sort of loud booming noise outside of my window. What is happening right now is that we are sitting with Sangha. What is happening right now is that we are breathing our breath in and we are breathing our breath out. What is happening right now is that earth is holding earth. And right now, our world is in a global pandemic. And cities are on fire. And so I like to begin to bring this talk to an end by calling the names of a few folks that we've lost. Last week, maybe the week before, I was part of a movement called Naming the Lost, and it was a 24-hour vigil as we called in the names of folks who we have lost to COVID-19. I found it to be a really deep healing to call them by their names, to speak about who they were in this world, who they are to the folks they left behind. To remember that they were just not a number. The beauty, the love, the music, the wisdom they shared with their dear ones on this earth will not be forgotten. And so honoring the lives of those who have died through the global pandemic and those who have been murdered through hate crimes reminds us that they are now our ancestors. And so when we are feeling shaky and uncertain, and when we are full of rage and fear, and when we don't know what to do, that we can call upon them as ancestors for wisdom, for guidance, for strength that we might not have. And so I'll begin by calling the names of those we've lost through COVID-19. And these are names that were in the New York Times last weekend, if you got a chance to see that. And then the last few names I will call are the names of folks who have, in most recent times, been the victims of street crimes, of hatred. And by great violence. And so I call the ancestor of Bassi Afion, 25, from Michigan, who saw her friends at their worst, but brought out their best. I call on the ancestor of Martin Douglas, who was 71, of New York City, who was a maestro of the steel pan band. I call on the ancestor Antonio Neves, who was 73 and lived in Chicago. He always seemed to be in the middle of some sort of home project. I call on the ancestor of Dante Dennis Flagello, who is 62, of Rome, Georgia. It says that his greatest accomplishment was his relationship with his wife. I call on the ancestor McLear Jacoby Jr., who is 93, of Washington, D.C., and at 93 years old was an aspiring math teacher. I call on the ancestor of Lorena Borges, who is 59, from New York City, who was a transgender woman, an immigrant, and an activist. I call on the ancestor of Aunt Sue, who's the ancestor of a dear one who's on this call with us tonight, who lives from Virginia and was a matriarch of the family. I call on the ancestor of Ahmaud Arbery, who was 25, from Brunswick, Georgia, who loved to jog and stay in shape. I call on the ancestor of Brianna Taylor, who was 26 years old, was an EMT, and aspired to become a nurse and a mother. And I call on the ancestor of George Floyd, who was 46 years old, of Minneapolis, Minnesota. He had just moved to Minneapolis a few years ago and had told friends that he found that this was a new home for him. So I call on these ancestors. I call them by their names. I call in their lives to be seen, to be witnessed, to be honored, to not be forgotten. So let's just take a pause for a moment. And so thank you for your kind attention and for your sacred pause. Thank you for breathing with me. Thank you for holding space. And so at this time, if there is any my dear friend Bonnie Durans refers to as wisdom democracy. And so we can open the space for questions, for answers, for comments, for wisdom, for insights, for anything that's living in your heart right now.
Hey, Leslie, when you asked, how is your heart? No one has ever asked me that question before. And it just, and I can say I've never asked anybody that question. And it was really, really eye-opening. And just asking me that, and to think that I haven't asked anybody that too, and that is something that I'm going to do now. And thank you so much for asking me that.
So, Joseph, how is your heart?
Today was a tough day. Well, it's been as you said, it's been a very, very difficult week as well. And yeah, I definitely can say, you said how you feel very tender, and I was thinking of a different adjective. I just felt very rough today. Mm. Like, yeah, I think tender's a nice way to put it, like put it instead of rough, but thank you for asking.
You know, rough, tender, raw, you know, it is what we're feeling. And I've fallen into the habit, the practice, in working with my mentees and just checking in with my friends. You know, the first question I ask is, what is the quality of your heart and mind today? And it just gives us like that sacred pause to really drop in and to feel what's true. Because so often we get into that habit of, how you doing? Fine. How you doing? Fine. Pretty good. And it's simply not true right now. None of us are fine right now. And it just gives us a moment to pause and to really feel into what's needed. what needs to be tended to, what needs to be nourished. Thank you, Joseph. So is that Shaya? I think you're muted, dear. I can unmute you. I cannot unmute you.
Okay. Well, thank you for this meditation.
Shaya, I'm sorry, we're having a really bad connection.
Is very full of greed, hatred, and delusion at times. And it's sticking out there in living, I don't know, technicolor, but it's very obvious. And I was taken aback because I didn't, the Buddha says there's greed, hatred, and delusion, and there is, and I also felt pretty helpless because I didn't know how to deal with the greed, hatred, and delusion, except maybe I can deal with it a little bit for myself, but I found the world of greed, hatred, and delusion overwhelming today. I still do, because it's the nature of this existence, I guess. And, nobody that I know of can change it. It just is. Jack Kornfield can't change it. You can't change it. The Dalai Lama can't change it. It just is. That was my response to what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just have to accept that that's what is.
Mm-hmm. And accepting isn't about laying down and giving up and being passive, right? And I'm not assuming that that's what you meant by that.
That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah.
It just is. I mean, it is. And, I think I try at different times to think about, well, how can I make a small change? Can I donate money to some cause? Can I make phone calls? Can I write letters? What can I do? But it's still true that it is. And I can do a little bit, but that was just today.
That was just today, right? Yesterday was about tomorrow's going to be something different, right?
Yeah, it will.
Yeah. And one of the biggest, and I appreciate you naming all of those really concrete things that you can do. Absolutely. And thank you so much for all that you're offering. And again, one of the biggest gifts that we can offer the world is to not get caught up in the greed, hatred, and the delusion. It is so easy when we see that happening in the world to turn our hearts against what we know and to fall into that trap of also filling the heart with anger and rage and hatred, right? And so I think that anger and rage are really beautiful catalysts to give us information to move into the appropriate actions. But we mustn't let our hearts get colonized and shut down. We must keep our hearts open no matter what.
I don't know.
I can hear you, Deborah.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure I'm getting this right. Thank you for being with us tonight. I'm very grateful for that. And I also want to thank you, well, for everything you said, but you named, and I can't even remember what words you use now, but you named a variety of ways that we may have been emotionally this week, withdrawing or, and I had to smile because I resonated with several of them. You know, this, I can't take in anymore. This is too much. I have to turn the news off. I can't watch one more video. I can't see that again. To complete outrage, where I just didn't have words. And, you know, what decade is this? What century is this? Who are we? So, you know, and kind of places in between, sort of just when you talked about the grief, you know, sort of feeling helpless. So I really appreciated very much you naming all of those things. And again, for being with us. Thank you.
It's good to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we had a nice chat when I was there in January, right?
I don't know. My cognition is not very high functioning these days.
Already.
There's, as you say, a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot. Kind of overwhelming.
Yeah. So what I was pointing to were the hindrances, right? This like clinging, this grasping, this pushing away, this confusion, this, you know, this deluded mind, this restlessness. And I feel like sometimes I'm feeling, as one of my friends calls it, a multiple hindrance attack, where I feel like I'm feeling all the hindrances at the same time. I can't quite pick which one it is exactly. And I also want to say, I really appreciate you saying, who are we? Who are we? And not those people over there, what is wrong with them? But who are we? And it's so important for us to remember that we belong to each other. There isn't this separateness. We start to separate, that's when it all falls apart. And something I was really moved to, you know, as I was said earlier, I am sitting retreat today. And in between us getting a little bit of news, and I saw that so many police officers from across the country are marching and chanting in solidarity with protesters. The State Police of Connecticut put out a statement this morning that said, we hear you, your voices are heard. There are police taking a knee and carrying banners along with protesters. So it's powerful. There are images of Black men protecting officers from angry mobs coming towards them. I mean, this is what we practice for. It's not this us versus them. It's we, it's us. In solidarity.
That was a blessing. Thank you to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Carolyn.
Thank you. And thank you for being here with us and leading us. I don't have a television set, so I'm not subject to a lot of the suffering that comes into our eyes and our ears. But I do have a computer. And so last night I was looking at what was going on, and I felt compelled to watch some of the videos, and I did. And then towards the end, I saw something about financial something or other, and I thought, oh gosh, I better find out if I have any money left at the end of this week. So I went on Yahoo Finances or Yahoo Financial just to see what had been happening. And on there was a really beautiful editorial that someone had written, one of the editors had written, and it even had a drawing on it of a thread, a large thread going through a needle, the eye of a needle. And the title of it was something about the thread that weaves throughout everything that's happening now. And that seemed a little odd to find on Yahoo. So I read the editorial, and it really is one of the most beautiful things that I have read. And it was a prose poem about everything that is happening here in America right now. And it was an elegy. And I was very moved. It was, you know, I had to send it to a friend who's a broker. And it lifted me up and calmed me down before I went to bed. And I thought, you know, that is so amazing. Who would expect to find something like that coming out of Yahoo? And it felt so good. So I just wanted to pass that on, the things that are happening everywhere.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And, you know, I keep saying over and over again, we don't know what the end game is going to be with all that's happening in the world right now. We haven't had a global pandemic like this for over 100 years, and not to this magnitude. We've never had the pain and suffering just so visceral, so alive, so in our face. We've never had these two come together. And so something's got to break. Something's got to change. So that looks like a beautiful editorial on the Yahoo Financial page. Like, you know, like that's what it's going to begin to look like. It's going to look like cops being in solidarity with protesters. Like, it's breaking in the most beautiful way. It's breaking in the most beautiful way right now. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Well, and thank you for telling us about the police in solidarity with the protesters.
It's pretty, it's a thing. It's a thing.
When I look at the news, and some people said sometimes it's really overwhelming, and I feel like my heart's breaking, and you feel helpless, I always remember there has to be a balance in your life. And I think about what Mr. Rogers' mother said to her, is you look for the helpers. And that tends not to be the super sexy news, but like what you said, that's even in these terrible, terrible things are happening. It was the police officer who took another police officer's knee off of somebody's head, a neck. You have people who are trying to do things to make things better, you know, in small ways. And I think that for me, it's kind of like just in my own little world, greed, hatred, and delusion. You know, try to keep that in abeyance. Try to keep my heart open so that I can actually witness what's happening and keep my heart open And I think the more people that do that, that actually see things with that open heart and open eyes and wisdom comes in, we'll get more of those kinds of behaviors where we see people helping, people doing the right thing, even when it's not easy. And that's where my, I have to hold that as a definite possibility. Philip used to say that, what did he call it? He called the imaginative possibility or something like that. And I have to hold that as that can be a good that comes out of all of this.
Mary. And, you know, and for a lot of us, it is so hard to keep the heart open. It is so hard to bear witness. And so, you know, if that feels like too much to do today, what we can do is to find a little bit of equanimity, which means to just find that stillness and just know what's happening right now. Right now, the body is sitting. Right now, the breath is breathing. Right now, the heart feels too full to bear this. Right now, there isn't enough capacity. And so just taking a moment to drop into this moment-by-moment experience of what's happening, sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that's everything. And a lot of times that's that pause that we need to catch our breath, to find our balance, and then to open up the heart and to bear witness, as you were just saying. Yeah, thank you. And Linda, did I see you waving your hand?
Yes, you did. You said something tonight that just cut right to me, and I don't remember ever hearing it before, and I've probably heard it 100 times and never heard it. And I would like you to say a little bit more about this. My personal liberation is caught up in yours as yours is caught up in mine. Mm. Wow. If you could say a bit more to that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. That's it's something that Dr. King said. Something very similar. I'm paraphrasing, but it's just talking about our interdependence, our interconnectedness. And it's also, you know, the Bodhisattva vow, you know, Kuan Yin standing on, you know, one side of the, of like a river, and Kuan Yin, you know, vow to take, you know, took this vow to stand there and to keep people washing over to the coming over to the other shore and taking them to safety. Mm-hmm. And that was their vow. So it's all tied up in like a Bodhisattva vow as well. It's like understanding, well, that, you know, if you're not free, I'm not free. And you know, as
that's what I thought of immediately was a Bodhisattva. And I'm nowhere near a Bodhisattva, so
we're getting there. No, but also, you know, as a queer person, as a person of color, my people, like all of my people, we did not survive by going it alone. You know, like I am not sitting here because someone's like, I got it, I'm gonna go do my own thing. Like we waited and we carried our communities along with us. And so often in Western Buddhism, I see people speak about, you know, their individual practice and their liberation, and it's like this very like singular experience, you know, and that isn't, yes, my experience around this practice. It's very much, you know, wrapped up in this. It's all waking up together, you know, And there's this beautiful quote by Zinju Earthland Manuel, where she was saying that people are talking about how they don't need Sangha. And she said, well, who's going to be there to witness when you wake up? And I love that. And so, and there's this pop song. I don't know who sings it, but it goes, you belong to me, I belong to you, you're my sweetheart. And I love it because it's just, like we belong to each other. And we have to remember that, like, I belong to you and you belong to me. Like, we belong to each other. And so we have to care for each other and love each other as if we are ours, you know?
Because it does so often in Western Buddhism, or in my experience of Buddhism, I will just say mine, that it has been about your personal awakening. Yeah. And it, as we're seeing things so interdependent, it's got to be like a more like a global awakening. We're all on this boat together.
Some have more, you know, some are on a yacht, some are on a little dinghy, but yes, we are all on, you know.
Some of us are in inner tubes.
Some are in inner tubes. Yeah, you know, but we are all now in the same water. I think for the first time, there is this, we are getting it in this big global way. We're starting to get it. Unfortunately, we had to kind of hit this rock bottom, but we're all beginning to feel it. And I hope that we don't forget it. I really hope that we don't forget it, that we don't lose this tenderness.
Thank you again.
Yeah. And so, Patty.
Thank you so much, Booker. I felt particularly grateful tonight for the Sangha itself, and it feels like a very safe space because I've been feeling very tender also, and my emotions are so close to the surface that everything sets me off, either laughing, crying. I'm very transparent these days. But you were talking about the analogy of boats, and I heard an expression this week that I loved, and I understand it's an old one, but I had never heard it before. There's no such thing in a hole as a hole in your side of the boat. I love that. You can't say there's a hole on your side of the boat. And I just love that. And it made me think when you said that about bringing people safely to the other side, it reminded me of the book about the Paramis. I'm crossing to the other side in safety. And yeah. I feel very, very safe and held in the Sangha. And I want to thank you and everybody in the Sangha for that safety.
Yeah, I had never heard that either. There's no such thing as a hole in your side of the boat. That's brilliant. And it's just like, it speaks to so many things in our life, right? Yeah. And you're referring to, it's Ajahn Sucitto's book, The Floods, about the Paramis. Yeah. I'm actually teaching a course starting in June based on that book and going through the 10 Paramis. So very familiar with that. And there's a lot of like water element, like water and boat and crossing over treacherous water analogies in the Dharma. So, yeah. I think it's a really, really great metaphor for all that we hold and all that we move through. And Joseph, thank you, have put in that song is by the Lumineers that I was singing to you all. It's a really sweet song if you get a chance to hear it. And so I'm going to move on unless there's any other questions or thoughts or any wisdom that needs to be shared.
I'm sorry, did you say that you're teaching a course on the Paramis in June?
I am, yeah.
Can we access you?
Uh-huh. You can go to my website, it's lesliebooker.com, and you'll see information. Yeah, and it's actually, it's through New York Insight, so it'll take you to the New York Insight page. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We do have that information on our website as well. If you forget her link, you can go to marinsangha.org, and we do have information about Booker. We also, I'll put in a plug, we have information on how to offer Donna both to Booker and to Marin Sangha. So please don't forget that in this time, well, it's been easy to forget. So this is your reminder.
Thank you. And Carolyn, did you want to say one more thing?
Thank you. I just wanted to ask about your course also.
Oh.
You have some fans here.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. It's a four-week course, and it ends with a day-long bringing the last two paramis of metta and equanimity. That'll end in a day-long where I do all four of the Brahma-Viharas. So it's 4 weeks of the paramis ending in the Brahma-Viharas. So it'll be a very... It'll be sweet.